crimes, the district attorney could still be in the position of approving of the civil compromise by saying, yes, I will move to dismiss the charges. So we still have an opt-out on discretion, which would be the same effect as your idea, Representative Parks, of having the DA sign off on the civil compromise. The only difference is procedurally the DA will have filed a motion. They'll have to go to that extra effort of preparing a document of their own. In fact, the parties might even come in and say, here's a motion for you to file to dismiss, Mr. or Mrs. DA. Would you please file this? And so you could still achieve that with this bill in place. Just food for thought.
I know we're not in work session, but I've been there, and I know there's a material difference as a district attorney when the person comes in and asks you rather than when you move it on your own, especially when there's social pressure to be tough with these kinds of things.
Representative Bell.
Going back to what Representative Parks is trying to get at, do you have any ideas if the DA idea didn't work, somewhere along the line about some kind of informed consent so that the victim really knows what they're getting into? But is there someone that they would feel, you would trust, they would trust, we could all trust, so that we could maybe meet his concerns but also meet, the other concerns we have about, them not being biased one way or the other to get both parties in and use any intimidation. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Representative Bell, I think that goes back to the basic premise about why civil compromise is not appropriate in domestic violence cases because of the dynamics of domestic violence. It needs to be treated as a crime. The perpetrator needs to get the message that there is a serious response from the criminal justice system with consequences. And if we start to find all the loopholes, the ways that it can be decriminalized, taken out of the criminal context and put into a civil context, we're back to 1965, where the message is you can do what you want within the confines of your own home. We're saying this is not considered serious enough for the criminal court.
Okay, maybe I need to ask another question because not being a lawyer, I don't understand all these things. If
lawyers don't either, but that's
another happened
story.
To me on the street, I could always choose not to press charges, right? Okay, I have that option. Are we taking away that option from them by taking this civil compromise? Whoever.
No, you're not taking the option away. What would happen here is that the arrest would be made. The victim could press charges if the victim chose to. If the victim chose not to press charges, the victim wouldn't have to. But the point is that if you did want to proceed with a criminal case, that would be kept within the criminal court system. You would not be subject to pressure from the perpetrator or the perpetrator's lawyer to say, let's take this out of the criminal system. Let's just make it a civil matter where we just come to an agreement. And so that the whole point is not to decriminalize this behavior, which does need serious societal sanctions.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
Well, the whole point I'm pressing charges, too, right now a victim may say, I don't want to press charges. The prosecutor can decide as a matter of public policy. I don't care if you want to complain. I'm filing this complaint. Secondly, but as to the civil compromise right now, the victim can walk in and say, well, you may want to press charges, DA, but here's my civil compromise. You're out of here. And the DA has no discretion to force prosecution. Is that right?
Well, my understanding, Representative Mannix, is the DA could force prosecution, but without a good witness. Again, what kind of case are they going to have?
The second part of what I was saying, though, is with the civil compromise, even if you have a victim who's not refusing to talk, for example, but is intimidated, at least the prosecutor can proceed. But with a civil compromise, the prosecutor can't proceed.
Correct.
Okay, we need to move on. If everyone's got their questions answered, we've got several bills and several witnesses. So thank you very much. Ramon Herrera.
My name is Ramon Herrera, and I'm here to testify against House Bill 3051. And I'm testifying against it based on my 5-plus years experience working with the Public Defender's Office in Multnomah in Washington County. And I previously handed out a packet to everyone on March 20th.
Let me clarify something. Yeah, we do have your packet. You are not, however, testifying on behalf of the Public Defender's Office.
No, I'm testifying against it.
Okay, I just want to clarify that.
Okay. And I won't go read that testimony that I previously handed out. I'll just make up a couple of points. And I wanted to respond a little bit to Mr. Belouf's testimony on March 20th. The civil compromise, I've worked a lot of civil compromises out personally, both in English and in Spanish. And I think that from the aspect or from the point of view of the Public Defender's Office in Multnomah in Washington County, I think we did a good job explaining the whole process and what it is, what it involves. A couple of points that I want to make that are real important that I think I want to respond to Mr. Belouf is that I think it's important to recognize that civil compromises are only allowed for first-time offenders. There's a check done. The district attorney's office always runs a check to see if there's prior convictions or prior arrests, and they have that. The first step is you go through a civil compromise and you go to before a court, you first bring it up. Actually, defendants, a lot of them have never heard of a civil compromise. It's brought up by defense attorneys only if it's discovered in an interview that they have no criminal convictions or no prior arrests.
Is that in the law?
No.
Stop. Counsel, question.
Sure.
What is it? Is it no prior criminal conviction or no?
Maybe court practice, but that's discretion.
Mr. Chair, Representative Parks and Manis, I'm not aware of any statutory restriction on civil compromise the first time to a person that has no prior convictions or arrests, and my indications from my experts in the audience are supporting my position.
Mr. Maybe.
Okay. What I'm saying is that they do not, in Multnomah County and Washington County, do not approve a civil compromise if you've had a previous conviction for a domestic violence case.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. It's a matter of practice.
That's a matter of practice in Multnomah County and Washington County because victims are required to be there in Washington County, and if the person has a previous conviction for a domestic violence situation, they do not approve civil compromise. That's what I'm referring to. And at the point where that is brought up is when the civil compromise is first brought up to a defendant. If along the process, if you appear in court and the district attorney's office opposes, they can either oppose or say, we take no position. The judge then obviously makes the decision. But in Washington County and more in Multnomah County, they require victims to appear and inquire of the victim themselves. And I guess what I'm saying, the points that I think are important to make is that most civil compromises, all the civil compromises in the Public Defender's Office that we handled, and those statistics that I gave you will show how many are dismissed. Mr. Belouf mentioned about 50%. It's actually 21% or less that are civil compromised, and there's quite a bit of them, there's like 55 that get dismissed because victims do not show up for whatever reason. Maybe they were terrorized, maybe they don't want to proceed. They do not show up, and those cases go away. Through a civil compromise, you do have an alternative. You do deal with the situation. And I disagree that through anger and aggression control, they have to complete that before it's signed. Most judges will wait for that to happen before they sign a civil compromise. They do not go and sign it and say, okay, you're going to take these classes, and then that's it. They hold off on signing it. And I think that Senate bill that I mentioned, 1159, that's been introduced in the Senate, also addresses that. There's actually a bill in the Senate to deal with domestic violence dismissals after they complete a program along the same line as a civil compromise. So I think a lot of people that have civil compromise worked out are not habitual violence offenders. I think there is circumstances where a civil compromise is appropriate. And I just think you can't blank out all of them and completely eliminate them. Again, we have a check system. I think there's alternatives. In the packet I gave you, in Multnomah County anyway, there's 14 programs that people are referred to, that the office referred to, anger control and aggression control.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Mannix.
We can send them there just as easily after conviction, can't we?
Well, the trouble is, I guess the point I'm addressing is a lot of them don't even get to that point because the victim or the defendant don't show up. And I mean, I personally spoke with Judge Bearden, who was presiding judge in Multnomah County, handled over 1,000 of these, and he actually denied 20 cases. He took 20 cases that he opposed, and he denied them. Those 20 cases were dismissed because the victim did not show up for whatever reason. So I'm saying the civil compromise allows for something to happen, for that damage, a broken door, a broken window to be paid, for anger or aggression control to take place. So there are those instances where I think a civil compromise is very appropriate.
Further questions? Mr. Herr, thank you very much for being with us. All right, committee. Before I move into work session here, I need to get a little feedback. Representative Parks has indicated that if necessary, he would reserve his no vote for the full committee and give us a courtesy vote to get the bill to the full. Do I have other concerns about the bill?
I'm interested in the
amendment that Representative Mannix has before I'm comfortable with it.
Let's move into work session then on House Bill 3051.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3051.
Representative Mannix moves the dash one amendments to House Bill 3051. Further discussion? Opposition? The amendments have the effect of limiting the bill to essentially crimes of violence. No objection, then those amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
I move House Bill 3051 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
All right. The bill's been moved to the full committee as amended with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Representative Parks, further discussion?
No, okay. Mr. Chairman. I will give you a courtesy vote, and I'll think some more about it.
Okay, appreciate that very much. Further discussion on the bill? Hearing some. Representative Bell.
I just want to say in support of the bill, something that I heard come up, and I can't pinpoint it exactly, but you know, in all our discussions about sex offenses among children, one of the important things we're trying to teach them is that no matter who or where, there's certain things that you don't have to tolerate, and that includes if it's your dad or your uncle or anybody else. And I think that's the trend that we need to follow, is that as individuals, there are certain things that you don't need to tolerate, and that we, you know, will stand behind you in not tolerating. And so I'm glad that we're, you know, moving these bills forward and making those kinds of statements, that a person who is victimized in their home is no different than a person victimized on the street and shouldn't be treated differently.
Thank you, Representative Bell. Further discussion, Representative Sedgary.
I thought that Representative Mannix suggested something in terms of compromising only when you're in front of a judge or you...
Can I explain that?
Representative Mannix.
After we've had further discussion, since it's clear that a district attorney can, in effect, compromise a case civilly by moving to dismiss the charges. And I think a DA who's worried about the consequences certainly could have a situation where they have the victim explain it. They have an unusual circumstance. They would like to see the charges dismissed. The DA can dismiss those charges, and that's really going to be a matter where the DA can exercise that discretion. I think that's a large enough escape valve that I'm comfortable with that, instead of requiring appearance in front of the judge and all that.
Further discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bell?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Parks?
Aye.
Representative Cesari?
Aye.
Chair Clark?
Chair votes aye. Bill's passed to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Representative Parks, we appreciate your courtesy. We will ask Representative Bauman to carry that bill. Judge, thank you. Appreciate you being here. I also want to thank the subcommittee for giving up their Monday night. We keep getting squeezed and squeezed and squeezed for time during the day, and I hope we don't have to do this very often, but I think from time to time it's going to be very helpful to just have a work session and get a bunch of bills processed through one way or the other.
You want to do 29?
I did not, however, know that tonight was the NCAA finals, or would not have picked it tonight. I know that council is very upset about that.
She looks upset.
I have, however, arranged to have the game taped. And so anybody who would like copies of the game to watch tomorrow night, for a small charge, I will rent you the NCAA finals.
Oh, actually, Mr. Chair, Representative Sinceri has offered to show them while lounging in his the recreational facilities at his house.
All right. Let's open the public hearing on House Bill 3055 and ask Judith Armada to come up, since you are the only witness on House Bill 3055. Counsel, please give us an overview.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, currently under the Family Abuse Prevention Act, there is not a requirement that a motion for termination of a restraining order be notarized. This would add that requirement.
Thank you, Councilman. Ms. Armada.
Just very briefly, we consider this a minor correction to the Abuse Prevention Act. Right now, there is a requirement that a petitioner swear under oath or affirmation when she or he seeks an Abuse Prevention Act restraining order, but there is no such requirement when a dismissal is sought. And what happened here, in this one particular case, an individual came in and falsely said that she was the petitioner. The restraining order was dismissed when the petitioner then sought to consolidate that case with her custody case. She found out. She was fortunate in finding out that she no longer had a restraining order.
and there was no remedy for her because the district attorney essentially felt that that was not a high priority to prosecute for the fraudulent appearance. So essentially, an attorney approached us with this problem and outlined it to us. He had also contacted the state court administrator's office to see if this couldn't be done administratively just through an amendment to the form, and the state court administrator's office said, we really follow the legislature on this, and unless they tell us, we're not going to do it. So that's essentially what
I'm questions. Work session? We'll move into work session on House Bill 3055.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
I move that we send House Bill 3055 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Mannix moves House Bill 3055 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion?
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chairman. This actually builds on the Notary Public Act, which we modified last session.
Oh, don't say that. Don't say that.
Even though that may offend the chairman a little bit.
Yeah.
But the whole point is...
I have a bill in to repeal the Notary Act that we did last
session. Have the Notary Public available as a disinterested person who can check out the identity of an individual. We have a whole process there where you have at least someone checking out the circumstances, so it seems quite appropriate. Thank you.
And you have to write a book to be able to notarize anything.
Well,
anymore.
We'll work on that.
All right. Further discussion on House Bill 3055. Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bell?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Parks?
Aye.
Representative Cesari?
Aye.
Chair Clark?
Chair votes aye. Bill's passed to the full committee. And Representative Bell? You want to carry that? Thank you.
If you need any background information on the Notary Public Act, I carried the bill last
call the night. Call the governor. It was her bill when she was Secretary of State. All right. Let's move into public hearing on House Bill 2993.
I think work session. I'll let them present the amendments.
We do. We have one witness who's come quite a ways, Mr. Bowler. Lou Bowler? Mr. Bowler has joined us from Roseburg, and we would like to get his testimony first. We appreciate you coming all the way up. And counsel, you will give us a brief reminder of what this bill does, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2993, as yet unamended, the intent of the bill is to begin to establish a database within the law enforcement data system to develop statistics, statewide statistics, on incidents of domestic violence.
And I think counsel is also designed for sort of case-specific situations as well, isn't it not?
That's true.
Okay. Mr. Bowler.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is Lou Bowler. I'm a Administrative Services Supervisor with the Roseburg Police Department, been with the Roseburg Police Department a little over 25 years. I was asked to come and speak to this bill as a police officer. It's one I support. Everything that law enforcement does, it does with records. Records keeping is the hub. And one of the areas that the Roseburg Police Department has worked on for a long time is developing a base of information on domestic violence. We have specific filing system that allows us to access that rapidly to do research and so forth in it to meet the needs of our community, which is one of the questions we've been asked. Without accurate information, I think it's very difficult for anybody to plan, allocate funding, make decisions on the size of a problem. As to my understanding, no place in the state of Oregon are these statistics kept to any degree. Those statistics that are available are based on estimates of very small samples, which are not statistically valid in every case. And there's no central repository. My feelings is that this would require very little work on the part of most law enforcement agencies. The burden of the work would fall on LEDS, Law Enforcement Data System, to develop coding, to develop procedures and so forth. Once they're in place, they would be very simple. Legislature's mandated that we do this with mental holes, that we do this with detoxified persons, that we do this with minors in possession. This would be just one more and would be a simple procedure. For instance, the Roseburg Police Department, for our changing, would be 70 cases a year, less than 6 a month. We would have to add to what we are now reporting to the LEDS system through the Oregon Uniform Crime Reporting System. I think this would be useful for future funding. I think it will be useful for anybody in the public service sector who is interested in preventing, analyzing, and evaluating domestic violence. And I think it's a worthwhile bill, and I recommend that you pass it.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Mannix.
First, I'd like to thank you for coming tonight, because we heard from another police officer at an earlier hearing in opposition to this bill, and it helps to have some balanced perspective in terms of, well, you're an administrative officer, I recognize, as I understand your identity.
Yes, but I've spent a long time as a uniformed police officer.
And it's nice to have that. I should mention that if we amend this bill, it'll only be because we're trying to avoid a fiscal impact, because the possibility that that might put the bill on a hearse in ways and means. And actually, if the amendment occurs, it'll probably be along the lines that you're suggesting anyway, that we ought to have uniform reporting and data collection on these kinds of crimes, so we'll know how to develop enforcement methods and techniques. But I, for one, want to thank you for coming to testify, because I can stick in the back of my mind now that it's law enforcement doesn't all come out on one side on this, that it's not just a convenience of the officer on the beat, but we've got to take a look at giving officers the knowledge of the circumstances of crime so they can go out there and help deal with these situations. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, further questions, Mr. Bowler? Thank you, sir. We appreciate you being here. I'm going to bring up Stan Robson and Dave Niebel at the same time, if I can. And let me start off with a question for you, David. Would it not be true to say that the bill really has two purposes? One is to develop the data, and secondly, to develop what I'll call case history. Example that I want to use for you is a student at my business, at the vocational school that I'm involved in, was involved in a domestic dispute, and we went over to get her out of jail because she had been arrested. Actually, both parties had been arrested, but there had been several visits from the peace officer to that home that evening, and everybody's story differed as to the first two or three visits and what transpired. But of course, the one where there was an arrest had a report. Bill gets at that kind of a scenario as well as data collection, doesn't it?
Chair Clark, I'm David Niebel from Oregon Legal Services, representing the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. That's true that the bill as filed had that intent to establish a record of incidents of domestic violence to which you could have referred in researching your student's case. Since the last hearing on this bill, on the 20th, I believe, there was a meeting of parties involved in this controversy. In fact, it happened today, and we worked out some amendments that, in fact, would take that function of the bill out and reduce the bill essentially to a data collection mechanism. The reason that we did this was fiscal concerns mainly, and because we thought that the data collection aspect of the bill was the most important aspect. What I have distributed to the committee is some materials that were prepared by Mr. Lloyd Smith of LEDS today after our meeting. Mr. Smith is here in the audience and perhaps could respond to some questions.
We'll call him up in a minute.
But essentially what we did at this meeting that was attended by Mr. Smith from LEDS, representatives of the Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, representatives of the Salem Police Department and the Salem District Attorney's Office, we worked through how we could establish a data collection system without a fiscal impact, basically. And it turns out that the current uniform crime reporting system is going to be redesigned over the next several years in line with some federal legislation that has been passed. Mr. Smith expects that that system will be online roughly on July 1st, 1993. They can design into that system a way to collect data on domestic violence incidents and domestic violence arrests. just as part of a data entry, a matter of data entry.
Can I jump in here? But
yeah, let me sort of give you some guidance here, Mr. Niebel. We've got we lose Representative Mannix in about 4 minutes, and so what I'd like to do is to have you summarize real quickly, and ask Mr. Robeson to summarize very quickly his testimony, and then we can move into work session.
Chair Clark, I actually don't have much more to say than what I've already said. The amendments proposed amend ORS 181.550, which is the general crime reporting statute that LEDS administers, I really don't have anything else to add. The particular language, of course, would have to be worked out by legislative counsel, but I believe on the last page of the handout, there's the concept of what we're of what we're proposing.
All right. Mr. Robeson, do you have anything to add to that?
Really, I don't, Chair Clark. Okay. I'll defer to Mr. Okay. Bullard's comments. And
all right. We appreciate your being here in support. It's fair to say, then, that what you've brought us in the marked-up version are conceptual amendments that would essentially change House Bill 2993 to a data collection bill.
That's correct.
Okay, and in response to the fiscal concerns of the bill that was brought to us.
That's correct, Chair Clark. Okay.
And the chief requesters of the bill, you're representing the chief requesters of the bill.
That's correct, and they're in agreement.
All right. Representative Parks.
Where do you get the data to input? You get it from the policeman?
Chair Clark, Representative Parks, yes. The policemen, the local police agencies would have to keep track of both domestic disturbance calls and responses and arrests that arose from those calls.
But that's not person-specific.
Not person-specific. Okay. That's correct.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Mannix.
Isn't the beauty of this measure, to the extent that some additional beauty may have been necessary, that it doesn't specify what report the officer has to fill out, et cetera, et cetera? It gives law enforcement agencies some leeway about how they'd go about this, but it gets the message out, we want documentation on this, we want information on this. So we've taken the pressure point off on telling them exactly what has to go in the report, but we are saying what we need from law enforcement agencies.
That's correct.
Okay.
Good. Great. Thank you. Representative Parks, and while you're doing that, I want to come ask Mr. Smith to come up and just put on the record his thoughts about this.
So a compliance for Klamath Falls would be to report that we answered 50 domestic disturbance calls for the city police in Klamath Falls this month.
And of those, 30 resulted in arrests.
Okay, fine.
Okay, Mr. Smith, we appreciate you being here. Identify yourself for the record, and we just need to get on the record whether you're supportive or what your thoughts are on the proposed amendment.
Mr. Chair, my name is Lloyd Smith. I'm manager of Law Enforcement Data System, LEDS, in the Executive Department. Yes, what this would do is fold in the reporting of these kinds of offenses, be they crimes or non-criminal incidents, into the same reporting pattern that we collect other uniform crime reporting data. There would be a record of each incident reported, just as there is now. But
can I ask you the one key question we need to have? There will be no fiscal impact this coming biennium as a result of this bill if it's amended this way?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mannix, that's true, because we will fold this design into the redesign that we already have some federal funding for. And many of the data elements, the relationships between victims and offenders, and some of those kinds of things are already provided for in the federal requirements.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all very much. We will move into work session. Are we on work session? We'll move into work session on House Bill 2993.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
I move the written up version of House Bill 2993 so as to amend the bill as a conceptual amendment, the one that changes, for instance, peace officers to law enforcement agencies, and it reads Section 1 amend ORS 181.550 vote as shown on the attached.
Let's make it easy and mark what Mr. Niebel gave us as dash 1.
Dash 1.
And Representative Mannix moves the dash 1 amendments conceptually. Further discussion of that motion? Is there objection to that motion? Motion is adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
I move the bill as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Mannix moves House Bill 2993 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bell?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Parks?
Aye.
Representative Cinceri?
Aye.
Chair Clark?
Chair votes aye. Bill's passed for full committee. Do pass recommendation. Representative Parks, would you do us the honor of carrying that? Representative Maddox, thank you very much. Do a good speech.
Yes, sir.
We will move into public hearing on House Bill 2994.
You might let folks know that Representative Mason is out there in reserve.
Yeah, Representative Mason is doing reapportionment battles and is available if we need him for a vote. So. Thanks, Ken. Council, would you give us, please, remind us kind of the provisions of this bill, and while you're doing that, I'm going to ask Mr. Niebel to bring up the requesters of the bill, whoever you want to bring up as part of your panel, so we can have a little discussion here.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 2994 makes some significant changes to the arrest provisions that relate to domestic violence, and also some housekeeping changes in the Family Abuse Prevention Act. I think the most significant change being requested by the proponents is the requirement that a police officer identify and arrest a person who would be known as the primary physical aggressor. The problem that's being